This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. The term "you've got issues" is not a phrase most of us like to hear. We often feel like we have to hide our issues and see them as something that we need to be ashamed of, rather than just another part of who we are. My guest today, Anna David, isn't like most people. She is a New York Times best-selling author, and she believes that our issues are important and they're part of our stories and that we should embrace them as just a larger part of our lives. She's here today to talk about how understanding our issues will make it easier to understand both ourselves and our relationship to others. We all do have issues. Welcome to the show, Anna. I'm so grateful that you're with me today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So I love this concept of you've got issues. You know, I know this is a podcast that you are doing, and I just love it because it's like, why hide the cards that are dealt to us? I think everybody has something they're dealing with, and I think talking about it's liberating, and it also normalizes things.
Yeah, absolutely. The way I came up with it is basically I've been working in addiction and recovery for about 10 years. And, yeah. You know, I came by this as a writer, and I wrote books about it, and then I started this website, After Party Magazine, and a podcast, After Party Pod, and I started to hear all the time from people who were not sober, who were not interested in recovery, who just liked the material because they related to it. And it occurred to me that, you know, which you and I both know, that the issues that plague addicts and alcoholics are the same issues that plague the rest of humanity. What I always say is that our volume is just turned up a little bit higher, so we have to do something about it.
Exactly.
So the idea with the new podcast, which I launched, I've released 10 episodes so far, I launched it June 6th, is I talk to a guest about their pettiest issue, the stupid thing that bugs them that they wouldn't even tell people normally because who would ask them? And then we talk, and usually in about like 10 to 15 minutes, we get to something really deep. You know, I've had people on that talked about, I had a guy on who talked about how he has an issue with people who wear pajamas on planes, which sounds really stupid. The more we talked, it got to, well, you know, I had this really awful stepdad. And if we were watching TV and we so much as moved our head, he'd yell at us. So really, I'm jealous of somebody who's so comfortable doing what they want that they'll just look stupid. I had a guy, the episode this week with Rich Roll, he talked about how he hates it when he goes to, when he's booking an airline ticket and they say, well, would you, you know, for $40 more, would you like extra legroom and all this upsell thing? And it got to, even though he went to Cornell and, you know, is this huge lawyer and this best-selling author, underneath he fears that he's stupid, that they think he's stupid and he's going to fall for it. So it's really interesting.
Wow. Yeah, it's a deeper issue at hand. And it sounds like, even with the pajama story, that it's just a projection. You know, when we sometimes see something in other people or other situations that bothers us, it's usually because, like the pajama guy, he can't do it himself or he was told not to do it. You know, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, how
well,
cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think the things that bother us are either that, you know, that idea when we're pointing a finger, there's three pointing back at us. It's something that we suffer from, or it's something we're jealous of.
Exactly. Like, we can't have it. Yeah. I think that's such a brilliant, brilliant, like, idea. And it's fun and it's light, but yet you, like you said, it could turn into a very serious conversation and bring up a lot of other psychological aspects of someone's nature, which is so cool. So cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, but when you do ask guests to come on about that, do people have like a hard time? Because I was just thinking of like, what would be my like little petty issue? I mean, do you have a lot of petty issues, or what do you like? Is this something that...
many. And that's
really
how I came up with the idea. I was going to do this podcast with my friend Mike Carano, who's a big podcast guy. And we just recorded ourselves talking, and all we were talking about was our stupidest, pettiest things. And then, I mean, I have so many. I talk about one at the beginning of every episode. Oh, my God. You know, really silly things. Like, if somebody tucks if I have a tag poking out and somebody tucks it in, I'm so angry. And it connects to the fact that, like, my mom worked when I was growing up, and so I would go to school and I'd be like a little bit sloppier than the other kids, and I'd feel self-conscious about it. I hate it when this is a silly one, but people have written me that they relate. I'm crossing the street. I've got it totally figured out. Oh, you know my office, right? You get how we have, because you did it with me.
Yes. I was on Anna's podcast. Yes. Yeah.
So you were on my other one. You were on After Party Pod.
Right.
If you're starting to cross the street and you've got it figured out and the car, you're going to go after this car and the car stops and motions for you to go, it completely drives me crazy, even though they're doing something nice, because I think it's just like, it feels like power and control. Like, I've got this. Why are you trying to control me? And it goes back to like dad issues. So yeah, I have so many. And usually almost everyone, I email them when we're booking it and I go, what's your pettiest issue? And they usually have like 3 or 4.
Oh, that is so cool. That is so cool. I mean, it would take me a minute to like think about that, but it's true, because I think a lot of people don't realize that there are little things all day that kind of maybe like create anxiety or like just a slight tinge of, you know, frustration or whatever that is. And to really think about that is so interesting. I think this is such a brilliant show. Let's talk about the After Party Pod and the After Party Podcast, and how that got started and what that's all about.
Yeah, my first book was called Party Girl, and it's a novel, but it was very much based on my story. And when my agent was going out to sell it, she said, oh, there's another book called Party Girl. Also, there was a Parker Posey movie. And so she said, let's try to sell it under another name. And her boyfriend said, why don't you call it The After Party? And, you know, because it's about addiction and recovery. And we ended up using the title Party Girl, but it stuck with me. And then, you know, I wrote books for years and I did on-air TV stuff. And then in 2010, I just was like, I need a job. I'm tired of this hustle. And I started working at a startup called The Fix. I was their sole employee. It was started by these three people. And I started creating a site about addiction recovery. It was complete chaos there, complete chaos. So kind of there was no one really doing much. You know, we brought in an intern who was amazing, and he and I kind of did everything. And I figured out, I'd worked in websites before, and I'd worked at magazines. I'd worked at Premier and People and Us Weekly and these other magazines. And so we figured out, how do you do an addiction site? Like, how many stories do you run? Who are going to be the writers? What are going to be the sections? What else do you need? And so The Fix went under. And then I didn't have a non-compete, so I just started my own site, called it After Party. And for 9 months, just kind of, I wrote a lot. I found there were different writers that over the years have emailed me and said, like, I want to be a writer who writes about addiction. Can you help me? Can you mentor me? And I said, I will mentor you if you write for my site. I can't pay you. So I managed to put up a story every day. You know, I had somebody create the site, the guy in Romania, for nothing. And we started just posting, and I started the podcast. I started it using my iPhone to record. And, you know, I got a friend to do a theme song, and I found somebody. I was editing it at that point. And then I started it in May of 2012, and I didn't know how to make it succeed, really. And by December, I was really not figuring it out. I was trying to do social media for rehab, which really wasn't my thing. And then in January, I basically got emails from two different investors, and they said, I want to buy this. So I went with one, and it was great. And so they came in, and they, you know, they pay for me and then my staff. I have a staff of about 20. I have 5 full-time editors and then like 20 writers. And we post 12 stories a day. And then what they did is they bought the domain Rehab Reviews. And they folded After Party into that. So we post 10 rehab reviews a day. And they're not really reviews. It's a misnomer. Rehab summaries sounds a lot less cool than rehab reviews. But what they are is incredibly descriptive. You know, we call every rehab and, you know, we get exactly like who does Tai Chi? What do they serve for lunch? And, you know, when we list all of that, and so we have more, you know, we're the biggest resource. We're called the Yelp for rehabs.
That's so great.
Yeah, it's like, I guess we have right now, we have 4,500 reviews. So, and the rehabs are our advertisers.
That is so cool. So it's the inside scoop for rehabs, which is so, I mean, necessary. There's so many clients that I through the years have called me up and, can you tell me about this? And what are they, you know, like you said, what kind of exercise? Do they have this kind of therapy? I mean, there's really a need for that because there's so many rehabs out there now and there's so many different, you know, states that have rehabs and what's the benefits. So I think that's fantastic. So fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good. You know, it's divided into, you know, the different income levels. It's divided by state. You know, there's a whole bunch of free ones, which I didn't know about when I got sober.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really, really, cool. really good resource.
So that's rehabreviews.com, which is great. And so now that you have this ship kind of sailing, can you tell me a little bit, like, what's inspiring you and, like, what's up next? And are you writing and how, I mean, you're the author of 6 books. How did that come about and what's going on next?
Well, the book thing came about because, I mean, frankly, you know, I was 4 years sober, and a girl I knew, this is like a character defect story, a girl I knew published a book. And I was like, if she can do it, I can do this. And
yes.
I knew 2 other authors, none. And I just sat down to, you know, I'd always been a sort of voracious reader. I sat down and I wrote a novel. And I got very lucky and had 2 agent possibilities. And then the one I went with sold it in a week and to my top choice publisher. And I was just
amazing.
Like, my life is made. And now I have so many author friends and I watch them go through what I went through, which was everyone's like, you know, don't get your hopes up. You know, very few books are smash hits. And I was like, yeah, but I'm going to be the exception. And then my publisher, it was Judith Regan, who was like the biggest publisher. And then she was fired in like the biggest scandal to ever hit publishing 2 months before my book came out. So it was people talk about being orphaned, you know, when their editor leaves, I was like, I'm orphaned and the orphanage was burned down. There was nothing there. And so HarperCollins, who, you know, published all Regan books, like released it under this imprint they made up. And it was just... And so, but I sold a second book to HarperCollins, a second novel. And then I just kept my books, you know, I had 1 New York Times bestseller, but really it was an incredibly frustrating experience because I don't think people, especially with novels, I don't think anybody goes in and like you have to go in and think it's going to be a huge hit. And,
right.
you know, 0.001% of books are a huge hit. So you're inevitably disappointed, and I took those disappointments so hard, even though my books did well enough to get another book deal. But ultimately, you know, publishing really fell apart during the recession and, you know, the 2008 to 2010 situation.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just, I really feel like book publishing kind of started to kill my love for writing, and I decided I wanted to be an entrepreneur. That really, that was, you know, as an author, you're kind of an entrepreneur. You're just like a one-man shop. You're trying to get publicity. You're doing everything. And so I just decided I wanted to really do it. And so I started studying all these people, and I became fascinated with people who did startups. And so that's really, I don't write that much anymore, and I'm completely fine with that. So I did... you know, once After Party, you know, as you said, like sort of got sailing, a publisher came to me and asked me to do a book. I said, no, I really didn't want to do it. And now, this You've Got Issues is really exciting for me. The podcast is doing really well. And I'm developing, online classes, you know, and my first one is, you know, basically about breaking through your issues and launching your writing career. Where it's going to launch in a few months, and I've gotten a publisher to agree to give a book deal to one person who takes the class. So,
how cool.
I know. Because I was developing the class, and I just went to this publisher, he's a friend of mine, to ask advice. you know, oh, what do you think I should do with this class? He goes, I think you should give a book deal. And I'll do it. So, about 100 people are registered, then we'll give a 6-month deadline, and whoever can turn, you know, you turn in the proposal, and then we'll sort of have a committee where we look through the book proposals. So that I have the website, it's writingissues.com, but I'm still developing the class. It's still a few months from being released.
That is so awesome. And that's so wonderful, because I know as an author myself, there were so many questions I had. And yeah, we have two, you know, nonfiction and fiction, but I still, it doesn't matter the genre of what you're writing. I think there's a process in understanding book deals, publishers, you know, book proposals. I mean, there's so many little things that go into actually getting that book seen. So to have, you know, not a shortcut, but somebody that actually has walked the walk and a mentor is so wonderful for people out there. Because I know there's so many questions.
Yeah, there's so many questions, and there's so many people giving answers that don't know. So,
right. And
you know, right. And in the class, I give the two book proposals I wrote that sold, one to Simon & Schuster and one to Harper. So, you know, I explain it, and then I give it, you know, here's what you do. But it's also about building a profile and creating a website and writing essays for, you know, Salon and Huffington Post and mm-hmm. all of that other stuff that, frankly, you have to do if you want your book to succeed.
And it's changed a lot since, I mean, it's changed, it's continually changing, but I know now you have to rely on the fact that you have to sell yourself. So that comes with a Twitter account, Instagram account, and you have to build a brand, a business to some degree. Because, you know, publishers will say, well, no one knows who you are. Why would they want to read your book? You know, or,
Absolutely.
It really doesn't revolve. The story is important, of course, and the content is important, of course, but it really does come down to this day and age, I think, with social media. It's all about the person behind everything and who are they and what is their brand and what is, you know, and what do they stand for? And it's a huge shift from what it used to be.
It really is. And I sort of feel like I was around to see the shift because Party Girl came out in 2007. And I remember what back when there was a publicity department at Regan Books, sitting down with the PR guy, and he goes, you have to create a Facebook page. And I was like, that's for college kids. And he goes, I know, but now we're having authors do that, you know, and
it's
pre-Twitter and certainly pre-Instagram. And and I say that in the class. It's more important. Honestly, I believe it's a profile or a brand is more important than your material.
I know. Unfortunately, but I mean, it is what it is. And you kind of have to just like strap on the seatbelt and go on for the ride because that's what you have to do now. So when you speak across the country, I know you speak and you talk a lot about relationships. You've had different positions in your life where you've been kind of looked to for advice, right? And you're a coach.
Right.
So what is the main, you know, what is the main tip that you give people when they're getting into relationships and the communication seems to be off or people, I think, express love differently. Like, you know, there's the book, The Five Love Languages. I think everybody kind of wants to be loved in different ways and communicates in different ways. So do you help people with this still? Like what is your take on communication? And do you, I mean, from knowing you, I would think that you are all about speaking your truth and having good boundaries, but what is it that you tell people?
Well, I should explain that the relationship advice part of my career came about very accidentally. I did a story for Playboy in 2005. I think it all started in 2005. And the story was a big deal. It was an option. It was made into a reality show pilot. And so suddenly people go, well, you're writing for Playboy about sex and relationships and dating. You know a lot about this. And so I got hired at this on this TV show, Attack of the Show, and that was my job, the relationship expert for 3 years. But
amazing.
I always felt like all I gave out was recovery principles. I had been sober, you know, 5 years when I got that job, and everything I know, I've learned in recovery. I didn't know anything before
mm-hmm.
then, and
mm-hmm.
so I, you know, started to talk about fear. I mean, because to me, that's the big thing. Fear masquerades itself as all sorts of other things. It masquerades itself as anger. As I don't feel like doing that, as I give up, as I feel sick, you know, as everything. And, you know, as an addict, knowing, you know, I heard when I got sober, you know, addicts, you know, have 100 forms of fear. And I was like, I'm not scared of anything. I go on live TV. I jump out of airplanes. But I didn't understand that my fear was of people, of intimacy, of all of these things. And so really that's what I always talk about, is understanding when your fear is triggered. And, you know, it's sort of the Brené Brown thing, is get vulnerable. Be willing. Be brave enough to admit, you know, and it kind of goes back to you've got issues, because all of our stuff, we have these little, like, time bombs all over us emotionally that people step on. And they're different for all of us. And so it's like, it happens, and you go back to some childhood wound of feeling abandoned. And, you know, I think it's really important to understand that rather than react. And you know, studies show that if you're angry, you know, what Jill Bolte Taylor, who wrote that book and gave a TED Talk, My Stroke of Insight, explains that a feeling lasts in the body for 90 seconds. That's it. A minute and a half, we have a feeling. Mm-hmm. So if we are reacting to that feeling for any longer, it's on a certain level, it's a choice. And I think the problem is we have a feeling, and then we have a thought about that feeling, and then we wonder, you know, we beat ourselves up for having that feeling, and then it just perpetuates. But if we can understand, sit with it for 90 seconds, sometimes that means, you know, I need a minute to respond to this. You know, we talk in recovery about restraint of pen and tongue. Just don't respond. And, you know, give yourself a beat, and your communication is going to be so much better.
Absolutely. That's such a great tip for people to just pause. But also, you know, there is also a way when the feeling becomes a thought, and then, you know, the thought, you have a thought about the feeling and you judge the feeling, like, you know, I should be angry. I should be more hurt. Should I be hurt? Was that a hurtful thing? You know, instead of trying to utilize that beautiful mind of all of ours that is so powerful, that everything lies in the mind, and to kind of reframe situations or go back to certain affirmations or mantras or things that help you. And in relationships too, it's like, I, you know, like you said, I mean, anything could trigger us, and to be aware, I think, is so key. Be aware of all these things. Awareness, I just think, is the first step. And when I got sober and changed my life, just to be aware of all these things is really helpful. Why did I cry when someone said this? Why did I, you know, feel abandoned when this person said something? I mean, how could that happen? But it does. It happens all the time.
Yeah, I think I believe we all have a central sad story we tell ourselves. You know, and anything can trigger it until we're aware. My sad story, I know, is the riches of the world are available to everyone but you. Even though I've had this, like, rich, wonderful life so far, and I continue to get it. That's my story. And, you know, I had a spiritual person I work with say to me, that goes back. You were given that story. That goes back generations and generations. And so I believe in that stuff. But I know, you know, my friends, I know what their stories are. I have friends who have stories about money, that they're always going to be, you know, screwed over with money. And I watch them get screwed over with money because that's their story.
Right. So the stories are also limiting thoughts, right? Because they're like limiting agreements you make with yourself. I remember, I've shared this before on air, but like, I had a teacher that told me I wasn't good at math and I was better at writing, so don't ever do math. And I remember that agreement I made with myself, and I never tried. You know, I mean, it's just simple as that. But also, like you said, through histrionic family stories or themes, or, you know, the energy that you have within a family unit or any kind of community, those kind of limiting beliefs also, I think, are so prevalent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe we go out and seek evidence to back this truth up. And I also believe we're always trying to undo everything that whatever bad things happened to us in childhood. And it doesn't have to be trauma, you know, just whatever we perceived as not good. And subconsciously, we're going and we're trying to do it right. So in doing that, we do it wrong over and over and over again, particularly in relationships. You know, this time, you know, a common story I see is, you know, yes, this man is unavailable, but I'm going to be the one that changes him, or whatever it is.
Right.
It's going to be different with me. So, yeah, and I do, yes, I do coach people too, but most of the coaching I do is actually for people who want to be writers. You know, we work through emotional blocks, but But really, I have worked with people on other things, but I do think I'm most effective with people who want to break through the issues that are preventing them from writing.
Right, right. But, you know, even with the writing stuff, it is all emotional issues, those blockages. So it's so wonderful that you are knowledgeable about all of it, because we all, everything is interrelated, you know, we're all mind, body, spirit connected. So just having the experience that you've had and how you're living your healthy life is just a great example for people out there that really want to achieve their dreams. You know, you've achieved a lot of your dreams. So I think it's so wonderful and wonderful for everything you're doing. Can you tell everyone where they can find you and the podcast?
Yes. You can find information about You've Got Issues at issueswithanna.com, and After Party Magazine is where the company is. And you can find me on social media. I'm at Anna B. David everywhere on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So, yeah.
That's so great. Well, thank you for giving your info. And, you know, it's funny. I was on Anna's show this week, an After Party pod that will be aired later, and I posted a picture, and I have a client who has done so well, has been sober a year. His dream was to start his own blog, and he saw the picture of you and I and was like, she's my idol. I'm so excited that you know her. So it was so sweet, and he's done so well, and it's so full circle that, you know, everybody's doing such wonderful things, and there's so much goodness and wonderful people out there like yourself. So I appreciate you, and I loved having you on. Thank you for being on with me.
We'll write back at you about everything you just said, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you all for joining us, and stay well.